Hi, this is J.W. Oliver with another Global Impact, and we've got a wonderful guest on today, Mr. Matt Larson. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing very, very well. Got my coffee. I'm at max capacity for caffeination, so it's going to be a ride.
It's time for my coffee as well. More coffee. I drink too much as well. But well, Matt has been leading the ministry of the Morning Center for a little over 6 years. His leadership is often unconventional and forward-thinking. Morning Center works hard to give women a calm pregnancy experience. He has five children, of which two are wonderful young ladies adopted from India. We'll talk a little bit about that. He's a musician, worship leader, artist, author, hack painter, coffee drinker extraordinaire. That would have said it all right there. A nominal bluegrass guitar player and really loves the Lord and the Holy Spirit brings across his path. So very cool. That is really interesting to hear everything you have going on. And tell me about what you've done in the past. You're now with the Morning Center, I know, but we just spent a little time talking about your two girls from India. So talk a little bit about that, and then we'll jump into the Morning Center.
Sure. Yeah. So we adopted two young ladies just a little over a year ago, as of July, from India. We'd talked about it actually since we were first married. My wife had talked about adopting, and I was probably a little slower to the draw on it. I was an only child, and nobody likes only children, let's be honest. But you know, things, we always thought we would adopt a baby. We have three boys currently. When we started the process, oldest one's 21, so 21, 19, and 16. And we just always imagined when you adopt, you'd probably adopt a baby. That just was kind of in our mind. And so the time, just things didn't line up. I was a musician and I've led worship leader for about 7 years. So it's like that, you hear that artists don't make, you know, the starving artist phrase, right? That exists for a reason. Like, they don't make any money.
that's the starving part.
But as things lined up and it became the right time, we found ourselves looking to older girls. And so we adopted two girls that were at the time 12 and 13. And it's been amazing. There's definitely been an estrogen shift in the house, which has been interesting in and of itself. But it's I would not change it for the world. And there's that sense of like, you know, will we adopt more? Right. Because you just see like, wow, we got the opportunity to impact. We're taking these girls from basically what was basically a prison yard. Right. I mean, they're being fed and things like that, but it's they don't ever leave the four walls of this hostel.
Was it a hostel, not an orphanage, hostel. Really?
They call them hostels. It's basically the same thing, essentially. Okay. I think I'm not sure there's a big difference depending on what culture, and it might have some nuanced difference. But, you know, so they were there and it was an upgrade for them. Right. Their parents died, and we slowly get more of the story unpacked as we spend more time and they remember things. You know, they lived in a train station, you know, just unimaginable. And so going there was, you know, provided a layer of stability. And probably, honestly, if we had tried adopting them a year prior, they might have said no, because we actually asked them if they wanted to be adopted. We didn't just go in because we wanted them to want to be adopted.
Right.
And it was fascinating. The sum up, it was incredible because I got to teach them to ride bikes. They went swimming for the first time, jump on a trampoline, all the things you just kind of take. If I could have bottled up the pure elation Kazum's face when she was swimming for the first time, it was unbelievable. And we got to participate in all of those moments. It was just such a beautiful thing, a gift that the Lord gave us. It was sad, but also, you know, it was kind of serendipitous as well. But the culmination was of it, really coming to understand the whole deal is, you know, Kara, my wife, had asked the older girl, Anu, you know, did you ever think that you wouldn't be adopted? And she said, no, I prayed every night and asked, she said, I didn't know who Jesus was at the time, but I prayed every night that God would find a home for me.
And unbelievable.
He sent us Isaiah. I think it's Isaiah 43. He says that I'll bring your children from the East and your daughters from the other side of the world. And it was like, that was the verse the Lord spoke over them. And just to see like, and the God who hears, heard you and sent us literally to the other side of the world to get you and bring you back. And it's just been extraordinary so many levels that we can't even get into probably right now. So,
yeah. And it's interesting because I think when you talk about the newness of it, right, the newness of the swimming and riding a bike and probably living in a, what would be a mansion, I'm sure, compared to where they had been. Right. And, And or maybe it is a mansion. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to pull you down there. But you know,
no, it's okay.
Here's our other one. No, I do live in a mansion. No, but no, I think it's interesting that it's that newness, that awe, that wonder. It's a little like when you first get turned on to Jesus, right? You have this new, invigorating spirituality about you, and I'm sure seeing those girls at a much older age than say when my son and daughter learned to ride a bike at what, 3 or 4 years old, they're seeing it at what, 11, 12, something like that.
Just for the record, though, I am a little slower running beside the bike at 50 than I was, you know, in my 20s. So
you better learn fast because I can't keep up with you.
Yeah, this could end it for me.
Good. Let's do this on the grass, please. That'd be a good idea too.
Not for you. It's well, if I fall. Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. You'll recover. I may not. Well, that's really cool. I mean, I love those kind of stories, and I know we were talking a little bit before, you know, and you said you can't help everyone. It always reminds me of the starfish story. You know, the guy's walking along the beach. There's thousands of starfish, and he's, you know, throwing them back in the water. And this guy comes along and goes, "What are you doing?" He said, "Oh, I'm saving these starfish." He goes, "Man, you can't throw all these starfish in the back." He goes, "What difference does it matter?" He goes, "Well, it matters to this one, you know," and throws it in the water. And I think that's the story, right? That it's mattering. And my goodness, God predestined that one for you for those two girls specifically, because then you hear about them praying for it, and there you come along. You just can't make that up.
Mm-mm. It was incredible, actually, when she said it. Well, and they've both come to know the Lord since they've been with us in that short. I mean, just the amount of stuff that's happened within a year. And we prayed. I think that's part of it, too, is this, you know, people will try to share their negative stories prior to adopting. And I just, we would just say, I'm not interested in participating then. I'm not going to let you speak that over our experience. And then we asked God for supernatural integration into our family. And I mean, it's like people who come and see that it looks like they've been with us for 10, 15, 20 years, just because we get along so well, humor wise, that, you know, humor is very complicated and we can easily joke together and laugh and have, you know, serious conversations. And it's across the board has been a very beautiful.
Wow. Well, congrats to you. I don't know if I'd be very good at adopting a puppy. So I better start small so I can work my way up.
Maybe a lizard or something. Yeah.
lizard. Yeah, let's go with the lizard. Goldfish. That seems a little easier. Well, tell me a little bit about what you're doing with the Morning Center. That's how we kind of connected through Samaritan Ministries, which has been a client of ours at ZymWorks, and just been a wonderful relationship. And I know we connected to you from that manner, but I was just fascinated by what the Morning Center is doing and has done and is growing and expanding. Give me a little back, maybe tell a little background about it and what it does in your words rather than me trying to squiggle it up.
Sure. Yeah. It's, you know, it's no pat on the back for me. It wasn't my idea. So it's not like I'm saying, hey, my idea was amazing. It was somebody else had this wonderful idea. James Lansbury was one of the founders of this organization. And it was birthed out of Samaritan Ministries International, right? They had this idea. Some folks were talking about building monuments to the unborn. And then it shifted into, or we could actually do something. Hmm. And how about we try and launch birthing clinics, you know, and prenatal clinics and do something that actually will impact infant mortality and maternal mortality rates in a real biblical fashion, and not just memorialize it. And so that's how it started. And as we talked about, you know, we were chit-chatting earlier about the idea, when you have an idea, that's great, right? Ideas are wonderful. And on paper, piece of napkin, wow, it's going to be unbelievable. And then you get into the reality of executing on an idea is really complicated. And, you know, you can step back at a point and see that, like, you need certain types of people at certain phases of things to get them launched. And I was brought in. I used to run an organization called Dream Center Peoria. It's similar to it's modeled after the LA Dream Center, transitional housing, after school program, homeless shelter, all that. And so one of the guys on my board there brought me over to the Morning Center, and they were in need of somebody to come into the chaos and just start to organize it and creatively move it to where it needed to get, to see if it was does this idea have legs? You know, is it something that's going to stand the test of time and actually have the kind of impact that we're envisioning that it could have. And we struggled for, you know, when I came, it was complicated, you know, just everything from early on. I was, you know, the guy who'd reset your email password. I mean, I had the title national director and CEO, which that's really fancy and everything. The older I get, the more I realize I don't want any titles. I'm not interested in that. Just means more responsibility. So, but I would handle all those things. Now we got a team of people who are doing that at the national level. The first city they launched in was Memphis. They started seeing the idea launched in 2011, saw the first patient in 2013. And Memphis was chosen from a tri-state area. I think it's got sovereignty in retrospect. I mean, they could have chosen any city in the country, but just the racial tensions that have existed there. Memphis is a really unique spot. It's gotten a lot of heat in the media recently because of shootings and attacks and things like that. As though it's not happening any place else exactly. In America. I'm in Illinois myself, and Chicago's, you know, could be on the news every other day. But anyway, so Memphis was chosen, and you've had wonderful people who've been doing incredible work. The idea is to provide prenatal care through postpartum care at no charge in the name of Jesus. Wow. And so the women that come in never receive a bill from us. And we were kind of stalled in that spot. We're beginning to get back to some other pieces of the original vision, which was to launch birthing clinics. We're starting to research that now, what's going to be involved with putting together three-room birthing clinics. So that would be the morning center. The morning center would provide the prenatal the delivery. And if there's high risk, of course, we'd have to transfer out as we do now to a local hospital. So we're going back down that path. But we've served, I think we've delivered now nearly 1,000, helped deliver nearly 1,000 babies. Atlanta is now launching, and they're now seeing patients one day a week, and starting to talk with Texas about going there as well. So trying to.
So Memphis is pretty much, it's a full-time operation in Memphis.
It runs four days a week, and they've been doing great work for a long time. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where same with adoption, right? It's like we need to be meeting needs before it lands on our doorstep.
Yeah.
Right. It's human nature, right? If you follow the Martha's Vineyard story this past week, right, the 48 illegal immigrants, they were swiftly removed from the island. And it just showed the idea of virtue signaling. Like if you're far away, you can talk about how you want to do all this stuff. But when it comes down to getting in somebody's life and it's messy, do you really want to do that?
And, that's not going to work here. Let's move them somewhere.
You know,
else.
It's tough.
Are you prepared? You know, yeah.
As the church, you know, we need to be living in the way that we already have a resume built just naturally, that we're not trying to, you know, it's just, we adopt, we impact, I've been doing ministry for years. And it's just the way that I live. I'm not trying to demonstrate to anybody, look at me, look what I've done. It's how we should live. You know, you had the Roman emperor who was pointing out how well Christians took care of Roman citizens, even more so than Roman citizens took care of their own people. And that's the kind of thing we want to do. And so the Morning Center, we want to have practical impact. We want women to have a calm pregnancy. It's hard to imagine, you know, we can sit in our living room and say, how could anyone think of having an abortion? How evil is that? They're murderers, right? We go down that path, and not that those are untruth statements to make, but if you aren't in the shoes of somebody, I sat next to a lady a couple of years ago who came into the clinic, and I just started asking her, you know, questions, and about three questions into it, she just fell apart. And I'm like, she has nobody that cares about her. I find out that her boyfriend got hauled off by bounty hunters. They kicked in the front door. She's going to be kicked out of her apartment because they kicked in the front door. So she's going to be homeless in 2 weeks. She's pregnant with her second kid. She's working a part-time job for minimum wage, and she hasn't eaten in 3 days. And this is like a real person and real things. She's just broken. So we got one of the team members came and prayed with her and just encouraged her. Somebody got her some food. Somebody else found her some help. And those aren't like, we don't have a food pantry. We don't have a housing ministry. It was just things that needed to happen. And 2 months later, I was back down in Memphis again, and I walked in, and she didn't recognize me, but I saw the same lady, and she was a different person. She was, her other kid was with her, and she's sitting on the operations manager's lap at the time. And she was interacting with her, and she was smiling, and she was just a different person. But she'd come in for multiple appointments and been loved on, and been reminded that she had inherent value given to her by God, and that God designed her to do this, and that God can make a way when there is no way. All of those things that, you know, if you have a support system, we take it for granted, right?
Yeah, we have family, and we have, friends, right. Family, and work.
Whatever. Yeah, I'll never truly be homeless, right?
Correct.
Because I know somebody would take me in because I forged those relationships. But when you have no support system, it's a different world. And
well, and then and now you're pregnant, right? Now that's a whole nother ball game too. So you've just added on that. You know, interesting, Matt. I just was just thinking about, and I don't know a lot about this area you're speaking of, but I can definitely see the need. But didn't they even call, you know, look at the negative connotation. Wasn't it pregnancy crisis centers? And
it used
to be all these names attached to these. So it was almost like you immediately went in and like, I've got a problem, right? Rather than
right.
God has well, blessed me with a child. Right.
Yeah. And that's the rebrand, right? They went from crisis pregnancy centers to pregnancy resource centers to pregnancy medical centers. Now, they've been doing great work for 50 plus years, right? So a woman comes in and they say, hey, let's show you your baby. You can do this. You know, and they, you know, she sees her baby. It's like, oh my goodness, it's hard to deny.
Yeah.
When you
that's
see
right.
So that's, and the, but the argument has been, okay, great. You got her to keep her baby. Now what? That, and it's somewhat legitimate.
But yeah. I read that in
morning,
the that's right.
morning center. It's, yeah. But morning center is the now what? Yeah. We're the now what? And so now we come in offering prenatal through postpartum care, right? So we can do our part. It doesn't solve the whole problem. Yeah. What I call the pro-life ecosystem is we want to work with, you know, maternity housing. We want to work with pregnancy resource centers. We want to work with, it takes a whole lot of resources to truly care for someone. And it's complicated. It's not, the reason nobody's done this to this point is because it's really complicated and it's expensive too. But it's meeting a practical need. We watch, you know, mother after mother come to the Lord. One of the first clients in Atlanta, the executive director sat down with the husband and wife and they both accepted the Lord. Because, you know, when you're in a place where your back's against the wall, I know it's the same for me when I came to the Lord. It's like, when you truly understand your condition, you're like, man, this gospel sounds amazing.
Because that's my only option. That's the only option that's going to get me out of where I'm at, right? That's right.
Right.
No, true.
Right. Yeah, so they've been, you know, we have a Christian staff that regardless of the response to the gospel, we share the gospel with everybody. That's why we provide the care. It's the vehicle, right?
Yeah.
But regardless of the response, they still get the same high-level medical care that any patient would get.
That is just absolutely incredible. And my guess is that the number of people who have accepted Christ through this must be astronomically high.
It's pretty up there.
Yeah. No, I can just imagine. I mean, you're broken.
And you get, you know, we've served, I think 41, it might even be more than that now, but 41 different nationalities, you know, Memphis and Atlanta, both you have just people from all over the place, all different religious backgrounds and everything like that. One of the, you know, to me, one of the biggest things, this is what I love about Samaritan Ministries, their approach to health sharing, right? When the churches gave up the medical field to for-profit business, they totally flushed a great opportunity down the toilet to be able to minister to people.
And
it's become, it's this behemoth that's out of control that everybody acknowledges. Same thing with the having a baby. It's like, and that's why we want to have birthing centers, right? If we have a birthing center and we control all aspects of that, we can control the cost. And it's not this whatever insurance companies negotiate. It's, no, this is the actual cost of this.
Yeah.
What becomes beneficial to the community too is that now instead of a mom going to the ER for her pregnancy care, which usually they just would show up late in their pregnancy, which is why maternal mortality is so high. Now they're coming to us. If they show up and they, you know, they're getting labs again, all that stuff's covered by government, right? At the end of the day. And then on the back end too, same thing with deliveries. Like, you know, if we can control all those aspects, it's only the things that they're going to need. And we live in a society where people are so separated from everything. You've got, in a negative way, moms separated from babies, right? It's this detachment. You've got men separated from being the father of the home.
Yeah.
You've got people separated from food sources. You've got, you know, on and on and on and on. So we're all just these fractured people. And so that's one of the things we want to do in this, in the, you know, this next decade is to champion a returning of like, listen, God, I have a friend of mine, his wife woke him up at 6 a.m, farming couple. And so that he could take pictures of their new baby. She had delivered the baby by herself in their bathtub, clean, and the baby was breech, did all that, cleaned it all up, and then woke him up. And I was like,
by herself.
Yeah, by herself. She knows who God is, and she knows how God created her. And when your mind is in that place, it's not like, well, you know, maybe you'll be able to deliver the baby. It's like, no, you actually, you were designed to do this. Yeah. And when you have that approach with things, it's a holistic approach of like, no, there was great intention. It's not by accident that you can have a baby, right? That's one of the most, that's one of the crowning jewels of being a woman. It's a beautiful thing. Restoring people to their food sources, right? If you eat garbage, it's going to affect your mind. It's going to affect so many other things. You're going to have so many diseases. But if we return people back to the food source, hey, you can grow some of your own things, support local farmers. Wow. And I know it's like, what does that have to do with pregnancy? But you know, it has everything to do with it, right? Because your diet affects that. And how are we going to impact these women, again, getting the husband or father back engaged in the relationship and in the home and seeing the joy of being a father? I see some of these dads out in the waiting room sometimes. And, you know, I went up to this one guy and I said, is this your first baby? And he's like, yeah, he's almost sweating. You know, you can just tell he's so stressed out because it's stressful. You have no idea. I mean,
you don't know what to expect.
They just send you home with the kid when you have, and you're like, oh my gosh, you're sending us home with this kid? Like,
is there a manual, instruction manual? Is there somebody going to meet me at the house?
Right. Yeah. And so it's overwhelming. And so when you can come alongside somebody and say, listen, you will be all right. You were designed to be a father and provider. Doesn't mean it's going to be easy.
Think about that too, Matt. You know, that's what's more amazing is, we came home and we had a healthy marriage, and I had my mom and my mother-in-law who were there to support us. And we had all this, you know, we had food at the house and we had access to medical care, but you know, you just put yourself in a completely different situation. Maybe the father's not involved and maybe you're in a bad place as well. And now you don't have the resources and now you don't know what you're, wow, just how overwhelming could that possibly be? That's unbelievable.
It is. Well, and a lot of times too, like in Christianity, right, we're guilty of, have you fixed them? And, you know, it happens, right? I've seen it a number of times and I had to finally start changing the way that I engage volunteers. Because I'm like, listen, if you're here because you think you're going to fix, or you're donating because you want to fix the people that we serve, you should put your money someplace else.
Yeah.
Because they may or may not get fixed. Now the idea, hopefully they'll come to the Lord and that changes the way we think. But when I was at the last gig I was at, to me, the Lord really showed me this in a really cool way. This lady came in, she was from Chicago and she had 9 kids with her from 3 different fathers. And I was the executive director at the time. And I came out just cause I had some time and sat down with her. And I was like, I told her straight up, I was like, I don't know how you're going to survive. I was like, you have a lot of kids. And she's trying to get out of an abusive relationship. She's trying to make some right decisions. And I said, the thing I do know is that I know that God cares about you and he can open up opportunities that we just can't imagine or see. And so I prayed with her and we couldn't even house her because she had too many kids. So we had to find a different place to house her. So a couple of years later, I roll around and I was at an event and I hear my name being yelled and it, sure enough, here she comes running up to me and gave me a big hug. She'd gone through this culinary arts program and was making food and doing good and her kids. And I was like, holy cow. So I guess sometimes it takes baby number 10.
Yeah. To realize
to flip the switch, you know,
or Matt to pray with me. Maybe it was,
well, there's
Matt
that, to pray with me. That
I think that might've been it too.
Yeah. You know, for someone to come along and say, I know there's a way.
Yeah.
Don't give up.
You know, I'm real big. I actually posted something on my social media just recently. I was just getting on that's how simple it is. Right. And it's going to be a drift from your story, but I think it's relevant. I was getting on an American Airlines flight going to California last week, and I walked in, and the lady goes, hey, she said, the flight attendant in front said, how you doing? I said, man, I'm doing great, but I'm getting better slowly. And she's like, oh, wow, I like that. And so we kind of talked during the flight. And as I left the flight, she said, could I get a hug? Because you just made my day. And I was just kidding around with her, enjoying it. And so I actually took a picture of us and, you know, and I said, you know, it's back to that Ephesians 4:29, you know, let no unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only that encourages others. And I think that, or lifts others up. I think that that's about what you talked about, right? You just said, you just prayed with her, gave her some encouraging word. God's got a plan for you. And wow, what if we just learn to speak that encouragement over people? The difference it would make worldwide, but we don't, you know, we're going to fix it. I'm bad about that too. I raised my hand, right?
I'm only telling you the good stories about me. I don't want don't you think poorly of me or anything like that. Yeah, it's hard, right? It's we are selfish people. There's plenty of times where I don't want to deal with something or I don't want to mess with something. And that's also part of where, as the church, we come in to encourage and spur one another on. Because, yeah, there's seasons where I'm selfish and I don't want to do something because I think it's a waste of time. But I need people to remind me, yeah, don't let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, only that which is profitable for building up others according to their needs, right? That it might enrich somebody. You know, what are we doing to bless and not curse? And it's easy, too, particularly this day and age. There's just a lot of really unwholesome, unsavory people in roles where they have a lot of authority. And, you know, you sit down, you know, have a meal with a homeless person and you hear the same story again and again, or you see people manipulating that, it's easy to get jaded with things and to think, well, where's the Lord? Where's the Lord in this?
I think the number one thing is I remember a good pastor, a friend of mine, his dad was a pastor. He actually runs Global Action, which I serve on the board. And he said he kept seeing his dad walk around the south side of Oklahoma City, and his dad was somebody asking for money, give him money, or somebody come into the church and he would give him money. And sometimes he, you know, might help him with a food or something. He said, and I think Rick said he was, you know, 10, 11 years old. He said, "Dad, why do you just keep helping all those people? You know, they might go spend it on beer or something else, you know, and not really for the ride." He goes, "You know what? I'm just the conduit to give it to them. I'm going to let God deal with them what they do with it." And I think when we take that approach, it's like, if I share somebody a meal, or if I share a kind word with somebody, what they do with my kind words or what they do with how I may have helped them, that's really not my responsibility. I'm just responding to what God's called me to do. Right.
Sure.
And so I think we muddy the gospel up as well.
And you hit it too. I think that's, you know, I have a no cash policy actually, which I use, which it ends all the conversations, but I'll sit down and have a meal with somebody. Right. Yeah. To me, that's one of the lost arts, is that we want that quick fix. Right. This is that whole virtue signaling. I want to do something quick so I can feel good about myself. Cause that's what it's about at the end of the day, is about assuaging your own personal guilt and lack of empathy for anybody else.
Yeah.
But if I spend time with somebody, right, it requires me to invest in them. And it's one thing I do love about the Morning Center game, where it's not billable hours. It's not about, hey, how many patients, you know, we've got to make sure we've made all these expenses through these bills and all that kind of whatever. It is, what does this woman need?
What does that person need?
In this moment? And we need to allow it to breathe. And what I would call a ministry of availability. Present in this moment with this person, with what's going on. And it's hard. That's hard to do. It's hard on a day after day. I mean, we had in Memphis, the clinic last week and a half ago, all of our providers, our nurses and doctors got their cars broken into every single
one. Oh, wow.
So now it's already been difficult. And now they come out and their car windows are all smashed in and they're still coming back. You know, they're not, well, I'm out of here. They continue to come back. We had hard times financially in 2019 and nobody left because the vision and the mission, they believe in it and they see it impacting people's lives. So I've just been blown away by wasn't my idea, no pats on the back, but I was drawn to it because I thought this is incredible because it actually is answering real problems and it's providing real solution and it provides the opportunity to have. I've been pro-life. I've never, you know, I didn't used to wear pro-life t-shirts, but I'd always been pro-life because it just logically makes sense to me. Keep the Bible out of it. You can just talk science or philosophy or whatever. And it just makes sense that you should be pro-life. But to live it out and to day after day to express and remind people of that, that's what's going to shift culture. Planned Parenthood's been so successful in things because they have one message. It's just one message all the time. And Christian ministries are kind of all over the place. They all have their different versions of it. And so it's not consistent. And you know, from running any business, like your messaging has to be consistent.
Yeah,
you better have to be successful.
That's right.
So that's what we need to get back to as the church, is that at the end of the day, you know, it's like we settle for all these different things. I think I was telling you about that. Like I'm very much a believer that life is God's intellectual property, that I don't believe in the Republican mantra of life at conception. That's when man's hand comes in. But it's very clear that God is connected to life before it exists, right? Before I formed you, I knew you. Yeah. I don't even understand what that means, but I recognize that it's something that's out of my control. And so I think until we start saying, this is the point when life has value, because if you want to fix shootings in Chicago, you can't tell people they have no value because they believe it. And then they're going to shoot each other. You can't say that in Memphis. You can't, I mean, go to wherever there's these hard times or, absent fathers, right? If you tell them they have no value enough times, then they'll believe it and they won't be around. And they'll just,
well, and then life has no value, right? You're exactly right. And once you begin to, you're told that enough, then that guy's life doesn't have any value and nobody else's does. That's a really good point. Yeah. No, I love your point you made on the notes there about the fact that it began when God, in his mind, I was trying to remember what exactly you said in your notes, but when he actually thought of you, that was the moment of real conception, right? It wasn't when you were actually birthed. That's right. So very, 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 very true. So what's the next steps for Morning Center? I mean, you got Memphis going, you've got Atlanta, and Dallas is on the agenda next. Is that correct?
Yep. Dallas. I'm actually meeting with somebody in Peoria, Illinois, this following week. I'm always looking for leaders, right? At the end of the day, you know this from the way you run things too. You're always looking for that leader.
Yeah.
God, where is that leader? Because if I have that right leader, Memphis has been through a lot of iterations. We have the right, most perfect leader in Memphis now, and it's a night and day difference. And we've got a phenomenal lady in Atlanta, brilliant, brilliant lady. So I'm looking for that leader. My hope in this next iteration, one of our board members is an architect who actually designed OB clinics. And so we're doing the due diligence around what would it take to launch a birthing center, a morning center that is a birthing center in Dallas. And then we'd retrofit that back to our existing.
Make Dallas be the whole center and then come back and backfill the other two. Yeah.
Yep, yeah.
Wow.
In Dallas too. They do everything big there. So that's just, fitting.
Well, that's where I'm at. So yeah, we go big. So if somebody wanted to find out some more information, what's the website address?
Yep. You can go to Morning Center, MorningCenter.org. So MorningCenter.org. You can also go to Linktree /MorningCenter. We have patient videos. It's where you can make a donation. Obviously we're privately funded. We don't take any government money. And so, we need private funders turns out privately funded.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, that was actually one of the most impressive pieces I saw is it seems like everything that births up or gets going is looking for government grants or government funding or something. And then it turns into a government organization. And what's nice, right, just like privately and what we have the power to do individually. And I think as I've seen in ministry and some of the things we're doing in ministry, it's really more about what you can do as an individual. Don't look at how big the budget is or how big, but you need a lot of those $10 donations. You need a lot of those $100 a month givers.
Right.
And those are just as important as the big gifts. They really are
very important. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the huge things too. I mean, if you have 80,000 people given $30 a month, I mean, it's a month, like even if one time it'd be great. We have very much streamlined our expenses. Our national team's remote, so we don't have office buildings. We set up our clinics are actually currently in local churches.
Wow.
So we've trimmed things pretty slim on our budget, but it's still, like I said, you got medical professionals. So it's still, I mean, my budget at when I was at Dream Center for a 7-story building and the small team we had there was $1.2 million. And we're running about $1.8 million with 2 clinics and full medical staff. So we're.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty lean when you talk about medical staff too. Yeah.
Yeah.
It immediately falls in. So, well, this has been great. I think it's when I read about it and you and I talked the first time, it was super interesting just to learn a little bit more about it and things you're doing that are innovative and very forward thinking, as you even pointed out in your bio, I think is really incredible. And I just commend you on the work you're doing there because, that's making the global impact we talk about. And it really is. It's making a big, big difference.
Appreciate it. The Lord's good.
All right. Well, I got 3 quick questions for you.
Yes, sir.
These are off the cuff, not all right, related at all.
All right, ready.
So what's the last great movie you saw?
The last great movie I saw, I think the kid stuck in the mine. What was that? 13. That was a pretty good.
I haven't seen that. Was it good?
It was pretty good. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a big, like, I don't like small spaces. So the idea like being stuck in a cave that's full of water, it's a little a little unnerving for me.
No. I didn't. No, I'm sorry. No, I was actually thinking about a completely different. I did see that movie. It was about the rescuing and
yes.
And how many days? What?
Soccer, my goodness, player, what did that kids.
Took like 21 days or 21, something.
Yeah. Crazy. Crazy.
Crazy number. And they've taken food back and forth. It was just unbelievable. Yeah. Lost the one diver. No,
they didn't highlight this, but I can't help but think that there were Christians that were praying for them. It's just my take on it, but
I would probably agree with that. Yeah. They showed all the other piece of it, but yeah, we had to know that was happening.
Yeah.
All right. Second question. What book are you reading currently?
I am currently reading The Power of Less by Leo Babota, I think it is.
Power of Less. I'll have to check that one out.
Power of Less. Yeah.
Out there. The Power of Less. Yeah. I read a lot of books like that. David Green's book, Giving It All Away. The guy that started, I keep on saying Home Depot, what is it? Mardell's. And, I was not Mardell's. Why did I just say that? What is the Hobby Lobby? Thank you. I had Home Depot stuck in my head. I read his book, David Green's book. It's fantastic. Where did Mardell's come from? Christian reading. I went. All right. Last one. If you could meet somebody that's alive today, they can't be passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Today, that's alive today, who would it be you'd want to meet?
What's fresh on my mind right now is Chip and Joanna Gaines.
Ah, okay.
I'll be in Texas next week. And I'm going to see if I can meet him.
Well, you just should have told me. I just call him for you to let him know you're coming.
Well, my dream, this dream could become a reality a lot quicker than I thought.
Oh, well, listen. It's been fantastic. I thanks for taking time getting to know a little bit more about what you're doing at the Morning Center. And if I could learn to play any of those instruments behind you, I could probably maybe turn that television on back there. It looks like an old TV. That's about all I could get done. I noticed you got coffee in the back, TV's on, you're ready to roll.
Yeah, I'm self-sustained in here. My wife doesn't let me out of the room, so I have to have everything I need in here. Just kidding.
Well, Matt, God bless. Thank you for joining with us. And we just really praying over what you're doing there at the Morning Center. And thanks, everybody, for joining in and listening to a little bit about making a global impact. You have a super, super week.